Are we all holding on Nundays on the days, the fourth to last of the narrow lines? So about two-thirds of the way down the onward. We started learning yesterday about the issue of Drusa, where an animal has been clawed or attacked by a predator, and there's a concern that the predator has injected eris, as we call it, which literally means venom, into the animal, and thereby made it safe. What the nature of that eris is, we talked about a little bit yesterday. Are we talking about an actual chemical poison? Are we talking about an actual chemical poison? We don't really see that the predators that we're talking about over here, wolves, lions, possibly cats, we're going to talk about over here, have chemical poison or venom that they produce. With that said, there are Mephoshim who argue that maybe, look, you know, sometimes we do say Nishtanu Ativim, that nature has certain aspects of nature have changed from the time of the Gemara till now, so they talk about such things are conceivable. But then there's a well-known explanation, so the Sefer Michtav Me'eliyahu from Eliyahu Dessler, the famous Baal Musar, there's a collection of his talks and writings called Michtav Me'eliyahu, and there's a section in there where his Talmidim asked him, he discussed with his Talmidim about this point, about certain things that the Gemara says to this, and he gives two other examples, where the way the Gemara says, the facts as the Gemara says them don't seem to match up with the scientific facts as known nowadays. And he explains basically the fact that the din is a din. The fact that the Gemara explains it in terms of a certain fact, the explanation, you might say that changes over time, but the din still remains a din, and in each generation we have to understand it in terms of how the science of that time will understand it. So he says, as far as this, then what we mean is, as we talked about yesterday, that you have that bacteria and remains of previous victims and whatever remain under the predator's claws, and therefore when it claws the next animal, then there gets in there bacteria and things from it they actually have. They call it cat scratch fever, which is basically the same thing, that a cat has at previous times killed and eaten mice or whatever it is, and there's bits of them left under its fingernails, and then the next time that scratches a person or another animal or whatever, it'll cause an infection. So therefore, the idea would be that the eris that we're talking about over here is that. Sichas Cholin brings up another point as well. The Gemara, in some places throughout the Sugya, uses the word zihara, where zihara can mean poison, but also sometimes the Gemara uses it to mean anger. So it's something along the lines of that just the anger alone of the predator against the victim can have a certain effect on it. In any case, so we started talking about the question of, we started saying that that Rav had said that cats are not able to do drusa. So now continuing on that topic, the Gemara says Amar of Amram Amar of Chista drusa chosul b'nemia. The clawing of a cat or a nemia, which is a marten, a little type of weasel like rodent, the goyim or ployin, that would be an effective drusa when it comes to baby goats and baby sheep. Meaning, before we were saying that cats not, but that was talking about bedaka, that was talking about small types of animals, namely sheep and goats, but we're not talking about the smaller specimens within them. Here, when we have, it's not only a sheep or a goat, which itself is a smaller type of animal, and we're talking about a baby one, so then we're saying that a cat or a marten is able to accomplish it. Drusa in it, in other words, that the clawing of such an animal is enough to cause a fatal injury to the victim. Then you have when it comes to a weasel, which is even smaller than a cat or a marten, that would only be ba'ifus, that would only be affected by birds, but not by animals at all. There are different explanations, different discussions among Achronim, whether the Chulda over here means what we think of as a Chulda, or whether maybe it means a squirrel. There's a few possibilities of what they discuss that it means. Okay, the Gemara says Mesi, now I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Drusa fossil nates on Nemia, the Drusa of a cat or of a nates, which we said yesterday can be a hawk or a sparrow hawk, on Nemia, or of a marten. Actually, knock of the hole, when does it create a problem? Only if it makes a hole all the way into the interior of the body. And Rashi actually said, in other words, we would consider it, it's no worse, for example, than if a thorn or a splinter or whatever, or any kind of foreign object pierces the animal's body. You don't say, in other words, now the point to the jirsa, as we're discussing in the sugya over here, is even if if the claw goes all the way through the body wall, that's one thing. But the issue with jirsa is not even it goes all the way through, but it goes deeply enough to be able to inject that venom, and therefore cause damage to the animal, where eventually eventually that venom or infection or whatever kills it. But here we're saying that when it comes to attacks or these various other creatures, Nemea, we said, was also a Martin. So all those things, actually, to knock of the hollow, only if it actually makes a hole all the way into the body cavern, all the way through the body walls. Rashi actually goes further and says, actually, Nikwa Dakin, to the point where even the intestines are pierced. So in other words, does that mean, according to Rashi, that it wouldn't even be enough that there was a hole through the body wall? You would actually have to have that the intestines or other internal organs are pierced as well. The Rana understands Rashi to be saying no. It doesn't mean that they actually have to be pierced, but once there's a hole all the way through the body wall, then we have to be concerned that Nikvu adapted. In any case, the point is that in that case, then we're treating a cat or a marten no worse than any other foreign body that pierces through the wall. We're not saying it has a special din of jirsa. So the implication is, also that's the point. We consider it like a thorn, in effect, abel jirsa less little, but the actual concept of jirsa would not apply to them. The eris, the poison itself, is not harmful, it seems, to any kind of creature, even to birds, and not even to birds, let alone to animals, not like the fish they're saying. The Gemara says, Tispera, still, how do you think that the Tispera nets like Doris? So what are you thinking? The mission, the Braisa had also mentioned the word, a nate, which is a sparrow hawk or a hawk. What are you telling me that can't do Jerusa? Well, it's not a Jerusa for nate. We explicitly mentioned a nate back in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek. So obviously, therefore, there must be something wrong with this Braisa. So this is fine. Holy Kasha, that's not such a question. That's not such a question, because can be joined with volume. You could say the Mishnah mentions a mate specifically about birds, but you could say that even baby sheep and goats are more robust and bigger than birds, and therefore nates wouldn't be able to affect those. As opposed to, therefore, the Braisa. So the Mishnah would be talking about the Mishnah then would be talking about birds. The Gemara would be talking, the Braisa that we just quoted would be talking about small animals. So there's no contradiction on the Chissa. So there's no contradiction between the Braisa and the Mishnah. But we still have to figure out what the Chissa is saying. Tosfos, by the way, brings a different girsa in Rechista's statement, that he doesn't even mention a nate, not a different girsa, but actually what we have in front of us, that he didn't mention a nate at all. He didn't mention a hawk or a sparrow hawk at all, but rather that he only mentioned the cat and the marten, and then the question would be that the Braisa mentions those two, but then we'd say, but the Braisa itself seems to contradict the Mishnah, but we'd say it doesn't, because they're talking about two different kinds of victims. All right, the Gemara says, we're talking about the Chistakata. Be that as it may, the question is still a question on, the question is still on the Chista. How could he say that a cat or a marten is able to do Jusa, and the Braisa is saying that not? Now, he also, Tosfos points out, that's fine. One thing you want to answer very simply. The Braisa is talking about larger sheep, and then the Chista is talking about baby ones. But the answer is, because once the Braisa does mention a nate as well, and that we're saying, we just said, in order that the Braisa doesn't contradict the Mishnah, we're saying a nate can be effective only on birds, then we understand, not even on animals of any kind, no matter how small they are, then we understand the other two also, and that would contradict Rav Chista. And the answer is, Huda'ama ki hai tana. The answer is that Rav Chista would be following a different tanya. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Beribi Oimer, Beribi says, Beribi, Rashi says, is Shem Chacham, is the name of a Tanya Chacham. On the side of it here, it brings from Marashal, another Girsa in Rashi, that Beribi means Godol Hadur, the great Tanya Chacham of the generation. Sometimes the Gemara will have, for example, we'll say, Yosi Beribi, or whatever Beribi, and it means, not that Beribi doesn't mean his father, is not his father's name, but it means Rabbi Yosi, the great one of his generation. So similarly here, Beribi would mean the great Tanya Chacham of his generation, or would mean just that happens to be his name. In any case, Bibi says, Loi Omru, Elo Ein Jerusa, Elo Machim Shein Matsir. Now, when we say that a cat is not able to, that a cat or a marten is not able to accomplish drisa, that would only be where people are not trying to save the bird from it. So then, in other words, then the cat or the marten doesn't get so angry, and therefore so it doesn't inject its venom. In other words, the idea would be that we're talking about not to say, as we're going to go through the Gemara over here, we're going to see it takes a certain intent on the part of the predator. This also fits very well with the idea that we're talking about something that it has to actually extend its claws, especially with cats and other members of the cat family where they have retractable claws, so it actually has to extend them and knowingly sink them into the victim, and then along with them go the bacteria and whatever, as opposed to if it's not so angry, it's not necessarily going to do that. It may just swipe at them or something, but not to the extent where it's going to cause drusa. So only Elab Malkum Shein Matsir, and only in places where people aren't working to try to save the bird. So therefore, they don't get the cat or the marten so upset in the first place. Album Malkum Shiesh Matsirin, but where people are trying to save the bird or the victim in general, yes, drusa, then indeed even a cat is able to accomplish drusa, because then it gets angry and therefore so its venom gets much stronger. So now we understand then that Rav Chisda is talking about where. So Rav Chisda would agree with that. So he's talking about where people are trying to save the victim, and therefore he says even a cat or marten is able to accomplish drusa as long as the animal or bird is small enough. Whereas the Braisa, we said before, was talking according to the Chachamim, would disagree with Bidibi and say there's no distinction, and either way, a cat is not a large enough animal to be able to cause any drusa. Unless we said like birds or whatever. There's more discussion among Rishonim about details of this. Is there a difference with as far as animals versus birds? Or do we say that birds always? On top of that, actually, the post can point out that most cats that we're familiar with, house cats, are domesticated and usually they don't attack birds. So if you're further on, we're going to talk about in the Gemara. What if we find a predator in an enclosure together with the potential prey? Do we have to be concerned about drusa? So if we see a cat attacking a bird is one thing, but if we don't see it attacking, then Shulchan Aruch points out that since nowadays the cats are domesticated and they don't usually harm the birds, then maybe we don't have to be worried about that unless we actually see that there was some kind of evidence of an attack. So that reconciles what Rav Chisda is saying. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine, but you're telling me where nobody is trying to save the victim, then the would-be victim, then there's no problem of drusa. There was a chicken in the household of Rav Kahana. A cat ran after the chicken. So the chicken ran into a room. And the door slammed in front of the cat. So it's not that the chicken closed the door. The door just on its own closed in front of the cat. So if somebody had closed it, the Gemara wouldn't be asking the question. I mean, but here the door closed on its own. But the cat was mad, so it struck the door with its paw. The ishachalach. And later on, they looked and they found on that door there were five drops of blood from the cat's claws. So we see, in other words, that the cat was going to give out eris, was going to give out this venom, even though it didn't actually manage to attack its victim. But it got mad and it clawed the door like that. So we see, in other words, even when there's no matzilin, even when nobody is trying to save the bird, nevertheless, the cat is going to get frustrated like that and give out eris. Tosfos points out that you could easily answer, of course, this was a bird, and then how is that a question on Beribi? Maybe Beribi is talking about only animals, and Tosfos says, well, that shows that Beribi is talking about birds as well, and again, there's more discussion about ins and outs of that. The Rashba says that, look, after all, here there was no Judas after all, it only chased after it. The point is, in other words, that we see that there was so much venom over there. We see that it struck it with all five of its claws, And therefore, so what does that mean? That at least it should be effective against small little baby sheep and baby goats. By the way, the Rashba points out over here, we see from this whole discussion that a chicken is considered oifagas, is considered a large bird. Here we distinguish in the Mishnah between large birds and small birds. So we would say based on the story and based on what the Ramban is explaining of it, it would mean that a chicken is considered a large bird. With that said, there were different opinions about that also among Rishonim. The question is, again, the Gemara is assuming that only when somebody was actually trying to save the would-be victim does the would-be predator get angry and give forth its venom, and here there wasn't any. And the answer is, fine, Hatzalas Atzmanami, Hatzalas Achedem Dami. Fine, the fact is, the chicken saves itself by running away and running into a room, and then the door slammed shut. So that's the equivalent of somebody else saving, things are going along normally, and the cat happens to swipe a chicken, and nobody's around to intervene, then maybe the cat doesn't get so angry in the first place to inject venom. All right, and the Gemara says Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan who disagree with this whole concept and say that a cat is not considered to do jurisdiction in the first place, they would say, look, the fact is the cat does have a degree of venom, but it's not going to burn to that extent. It has venom or bacteria or whatever, but it's not so powerful that it should actually be able to kill, that it should actually be able to cause symptoms in the victim that would make it jurisa. So therefore the Chum say you don't have to worry about it. All of that is one way of explaining what Rav Chisda had said. So in short, Rav Chisda had said that a cat or marten are able to accomplish drisa, but only by small sheep, but only by baby sheep and baby goats. So we said that Rav Chisda is holding that as Rav Chisda would draw a distinction whether anybody is trying to save the victim or not. Then we have the Ribi would hold that, and Rav Chisda holds like the Ribi, but meanwhile we have other Braises that disagree with that. Now the Gemara says that Ikadami, others say a different answer. Homani, the Ribi. Again, we could say that the Braisa that said, now we could say the other way around. That the Braisa that says that a cat can't accomplish drisa would be according to Beribi. So first we said in the first version, we said that Rav Chisda follows Beribi. We didn't have another Braisa that follows him, but fine, Rav Chisda is entitled to follow a Tana, even though there's a different Braisa that disagrees with him. Now we would say the Braisa that said that a cat is not able to accomplish drisa, that itself would be according to Beribi. Because again, Beribi says that there's a problem of drusa only when there's somebody who's trying to save the victim. But when not, then there's no drusa. Because again, then the cat doesn't get so angry and it doesn't put out its venom. So that's another way. So therefore, that's when the Braisa says that a cat or a marten is not able to do this, would be in a case like that where nobody is trying to save, the would-be victim. Now Tosfos does point out though that would only be according to this version, then even Beribi would only hold, but that's as far as the nate sparrow hawk or the hawk we said before. There we would in fact say that it doesn't matter with birds. It always accomplishes drisa, and with baby sheep and baby goats, then it can't accomplish drisa. So I'm going to ask the Malcolm Shane Matsuna Angel. So I went to the second version also. We have to ask the same question as we asked before. That where nobody is trying to save it, is there no Jusa? What about that chicken in Rav Kahana's household? The Roat Chosel Basra, where a cat chased it, the Ola Idruna, and the chicken ran into a room, the Itchidosha Ba'ape, and the door slammed in front of the cat, or Machdo the Dasha the Sichufe, and the cat swiped at the door with its paw. And they found five drops of blood together with the venom that goes with them on the door. And the answer is, like we said before, the fact that it tried to save itself and the fact that the door slammed in front of it is the equivalent of somebody else trying to save it, and therefore we can say that the cat is able to, does give out a powerful venom in that case, and therefore, had it been successful, then the animal would be traced. But that doesn't show that in a case where nobody is trying, neither it nor others are trying to save it, that the same thing should happen, not necessarily. So therefore, the Braisa before so we have two different ways of saying it. One is that when Rav Chista had said that a cat or marten are able to accomplish Drusa with baby sheep or baby goats, that would be specifically when somebody is trying to save them. The other version we're saying is that when the Braisa says that a cat or a marten don't accomplish drisa, then that drisa would be following the ribi and talking about where nobody is trying to save it, and therefore the predator doesn't get so angry in the first place. The Gemara continues. Rav Kahana asks you on this question of a cat. Yes, drisa lafossila and drisa lafossil. Well, bottom line is that can a cat accomplish drisa or can it not? Now, Tosfos brings from the Rigvan that they had several different stages of questions. First, they were talking about birds, whether a cat is able to accomplish drisa with birds. So we're going to have several questions over here, one after the other. So Tosfos explained the following series of questions that he's going to ask him were one after the other. He asked him one, and then based on the answer of that, he asked the next one. So first, can a cat accomplish drisa? So Rav answers, after the whole day, even a weasel, which is smaller than a cat, is able to accomplish drusa. So Rav Kahana continues and asks, yes, drusa l'cholda, or in drusa l'cholda. Can a weasel accomplish drusa, or can it not? Now, why does he need to ask that? So Tosfos explains, first he was asking about birds, whether a cat, and he says that when it comes to birds, even a weasel would accomplish drusa. Then later on, he asks him about larger sheep, and he asks him, can a cholda accomplish drusa? And he answers him, even a cat, which is larger than a weasel, would not be able to accomplish drusa. So that says, the Gemara is going to go on to say, we don't need Tosfos to tell us that. The Gemara itself is going to explain in the next couple of lines that there were different questions over here about different types of victims. Rav Kahana continues. What about lachosel lachoda? When it comes to a cat or weasel, yeshlan drusa or ein lahen drusa, do they accomplish drusa or not? Amalei, and he answers him, lachosel yesh drusa lachoda ein drusa. A cat does accomplish drusa, a weasel does not. So now the questions seem to be repetitious and seem to be sort of self-contradictory, and the answers also seem to be. So the Moses, the Lord Kasha, there's no contradiction between the various things that Rav is saying. When he says that even a weasel, there is drusa, that would be specifically with birds. So any of these things, a cat or a weasel, is able to accomplish drusa by birds. When he says a cat not, and certainly not a weasel, which is smaller, would be the Imri Ravavi. We're talking about large sheep. So sheep on the one hand are behemoth dactyl. They are a smaller type of animal, but here we're talking about a larger specimen within them, an adult sheep, and therefore we're saying neither one is able to accomplish drusa with it. When he said lachosel, when he said hoda amalei, lachosel yes drusa, lafolda and drusa, and when he says that a cat yes, a fold or not, would be specifically we're talking about baby sheep and goats, where a cat is able to accomplish drusa because it's a larger predator and a holda is not because it's smaller. How we define at what point they transition from dorium atloyim to bigger ones. Then you have different achronim talk about that. So now Tosfos explains, in other words, again, so you can have, these were three different times. The first time Rav was dealing with birds, sort of kind of asked him whether a cat would be effective, and the second time he was dealing with large sheep, etc. And then Tosfos says that all three, he asked one after the other, So Rav is telling him, when you're asking, is there, can a cat do drisa? You should know that there is actually a case where even a cholda can do drisa. Then Rav Kahana says, well, does that mean always? And Rav tells him, no, because on the contrary, there are cases where even a cat can't accomplish drisa. So according to that second way of, in other words, according to the first way of Tosfos' understanding, so that's the Gemara itself is telling us that we're talking about three different types of animals. But Tosfos is explaining that either Rav Kahana asked him at three different times when Rav was dealing with three different types of animals, and each time, on a different occasion, Rav Kahana asked him, what's the story with this animal, or that it was one after the other, and that when Rav Kahana first asks about a cat, then Rav is telling him, don't just ask about a cat, you should be aware there are times when a weasel would also make it drusa, and then he asks him, does that mean always? No, sometimes even a cat won't, and so forth. So Gemara says now, let's go back to the Mishnah. We said that, we mentioned like this, we said that a nace, which is a sparrow hawk or a hawk, is able to do drissa in small birds. So Rashi back on the Mishnah had explained that it means, for example, pigeons, sparrows or whatever. And then he said, on the other hand, the Mishnah had said that when it comes to an oifagas, a larger bird, and Rashi had defined that over there as meaning, for example, geese and chickens we just talked about before, that Rishonim points out based on the Gemara we just learned, that chickens apparently are considered a large bird. So for them, only a larger predator bird would be able to cause drusa for them. We said in the Mishnah the word can be gas, which means large, or it can be gaz, which is a larger type of predator than the hawk or fowl. So you want to see Boyer Rashi. What about other non-kosher birds? Later on in this parak, we're going to talk about the various kinds of non-kosher birds. Many of them are predators. So what about them? Yeshlan drusa, yemlan drusa. Are they able to accomplish drusa in birds or not? One way of looking at it, in fact, is that again, does gas in our Mishnah mean just a large predator? Then in that case, then the Gemara's question would only be as far as smaller predatory birds, larger ones such as eagles and vultures. The Gemara wouldn't even have the question. As if you explain like Rashi did, that the gas of our Mishnah is a specific type of bird, which Rashi had translated as a falcon, then fine. Then the question, or actually Rashi had translated as a hawk, or they'd be showing him translated but as a falcon, then fine. If we're into that, then the question would be about other predators as well, such as eagles and vultures and whatnot. Tosfos does point out, by the way, the question is not whether later on in the Perek, when we talk about kosher and non-kosher birds, we're going to be talking about that one of the synonym of non-kosher birds is whether it's dervis. So here we're not talking about that. Obviously, these birds are considered to be dervis, or if not, then they have other simone tuma, and therefore there's no question they're not kosher. The question is over here, as far as drisa that we're talking about over here, whether they're able to injure an animal with their venom or their bacteria or whatever to the extent that it would be drisa. Tosfos also adds that given that we're saying over here, that we're saying over there later in the parak, that only non-kosher birds are dirtus, and by definition, we can't be talking about larger kosher birds over here. Of course, they wouldn't accomplish this. So that's the question. What about other kinds of predatory birds? So the Gemara says, Amalet of Hilu Ravachi, Yavena, Beir of Kahana, when we were in the yeshiva of Kahana, Amar, so he said, Shar Ophis Tmein, Yeshlan Jirusa, that yes, other kinds of non-kosher birds are in fact able to accomplish drusa as well. So the Gemara says, "Va'anantanan the drusas and nates for ufadak." Why? Our Mishnah had mentioned only a nate by small birds, implying that only a nate. However we define that, whether a sparrow hawk or a regular hawk. And the answer is no, because what the Gemara means is drusas and nates with the kabasay. What we mean is that a nate is able to accomplish drusa even where the victim is its own size. So a nate, however you define a nate, is a certain size. So now let's say it goes and attacks a bird that happens to be the same size as it. Nevertheless, we would say that its venom, its eris, is strong enough to cause it to become drusa. The inner, whereas other non-kosher birds, the rule would only be the dezutri minayu, only if they're smaller than them. So let's say, for example, an eagle would make, according to that way of looking at it, would make a bird trefa only if the victim is smaller than the eagle. The Ikadami, another version, Drusas and Nates with the Rabbi Mine, another version is a rule differently, that when it comes to a Nates, even if the victim is larger than it, then the Nates is able to make it today. The Inach, whereas the other ones, and so again, it does fine, it does have to be, as the Mishnah had said, only in small types of birds, so it wouldn't apply to chickens or geese, for example, but nevertheless, within the types of birds that are defined as small, then we don't care even if the nace is smaller than this bird. The inach, whereas other kinds of predatory birds, the decavasai, they would make it today for only if they're at least the same size of it or larger. And that's halacha. So therefore, so in other words, all the predatory birds are able to make a brood trefa. However, with most of them, they have to be at least the size of the victim, and only by the mates of our Mishnah are we saying that even if they're smaller than it, then they're able to make them. So. Okay, continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Kahana Mishmeid Rav Shimi Bar Ashi, Ein Drusa L'Shul. If a fox attacks an animal, then it doesn't cause drisa. So the Gemara says we're showing him discuss the Rashba says that fine, that would be as far as animals, but birds would be able to after all. For here we're talking about animals. But the Gemara says, Aini, is that so? Vaki also to Dimi, when the Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he told over, Maisa Bedoras Shul Rofa Bemelchat Shabbat Sinki, it happened once that a fox attacked a female sheep in the bathhouse of Beis Hinki. And the case was brought to the Chachamim, and they said, yes, Jerusa, that it is, there is an issue of Jerusa. So we see therefore that a fox is able to accomplish Jerusa. Now, the Tosfos points out, the Gemara could have answered that we're talking about a small female sheep. Whereas Rav Kahana, maybe we'd be talking about larger ones, but no, because then why would Rav Kahana mention Dafka a fox? We already talked about before about a cat, and cats are more prone to attack, and we said before that it wouldn't apply to large sheep. So therefore, Rav Kahana must be talking about whether small or large, and in that case, the question is that here we see whether we say it was a small animal or a large one. It seems that the Chachamim are telling us that yes, a fox is able to accomplish drusa. So the answer is Amar Rav Safra, Hahi Chosel Abba. So Rav Safra says, in fact, Rav Dimi got the story not quite correct. It wasn't actually a fox; it was actually a cat. And as we said before, a cat is able to accomplish drusa with smaller animals. And here we're talking about it was a female sheep, which are smaller and weaker than the males, and therefore a cat is able to do Jerusalem. The Gemara says Ikadamri, another version of this of the discussion goes, another version, Amar Kahana, Mishmeid Rabbi Shimon Bar Ashi, Yesh Jerusalem Shul, that again, starting with the same thing that Rav Kahana says in the name of Shimon Bar Ashi, now the other way around. In the first version, Rav Kahana reports that no, a fox is not able to accomplish Jerusalem, and the question is from the story, and the answer is it wasn't a fox over there, it was a cat. In the second version, the other way around, Rav Kahana says in the name of Shimon Bar Ashi, Yesh Jerusalem Shul, a fox is able to accomplish Jerusalem. And the question is, Amy, is that so? That it happened that a fox clawed a ewe in a female sheep in the bathhouse of Beis Hinni, and the case was brought to the Chachamim, and this time, in the second version, they said that it was not Jerusa. And again, you know, you could start talking about big versus small ewes, but then, in other words, Tosfos says, again, if that was the case, if it was just a matter of a large animal, then there would be no fear. Because again, even cats are not able to. So the Amar of Safra, who Kelav Hava, so Rav Safra says again, the story was not reported quite right, that it wasn't a fox, it was actually a dog. And a dog, as the Gemara is going to say in the next line, is not able to accomplish Drusa. So Amar of Yosef, Naktinen, we have the Kabbalah from our ancestors, in Drusa the Kelav, that a dog does not accomplish drusa. It doesn't have this kind of venom, and therefore if it attacks an animal. So again, if it pierces all the way through the body wall, there's one thing we said before, any foreign object would make it trefa, but a dog attacking a sheep or whatever is not going to make it drusa, is not going to make it trefa. Again, it becomes easier to understand in terms of that idea of the retractable claws and all that, because dogs don't have those. So therefore, like, less stuff gets stuck under their claws in the first place. Although not all the creatures the Gemara has mentioned so far have retractable claws, so that's not necessarily the entire answer. Ultimately, we have to go with what Rabbi Leo Gessler says in Michtam Elio over there, that the Chachamim are telling us facts that they learned Halacha L'Mishnah Sinai and that they discovered by observation. And whether in a particular generation we understand them in one scientific way or in a different generation in a different way doesn't change the underlying halacha. Okay. The Gemara continues, more details about Jerusa. Amar Abayim Naktinen, we also have the Kabbalah, Ein Jerusa El Binyan. The whole concept of Jerusa only applies if the predator attacks the victim with its front leg. Lapuki regal deloy, as opposed to with his back legs, then there's no drisa with that. It doesn't give out venom in that case. The Rashba points out that that would only be as far as predatory animals, predatory broods, and they only have two legs in the first place, so therefore of necessity, then obviously, then we said, we talked before about drisa with predatory broods, so then obviously that would apply to their legs. Also, continues Abaya, in drisa elevates its burden. Furthermore, drusa would only apply with the nails or the claws of the animals, lapuki shame deloy, as opposed to if it bites into the victim, then that doesn't cause drusa. Again, pierces a vital organ is one thing, but we're talking about as far as the specifics of drusa, where the Gemara is going to say later on, the flesh reddens over there, and you have that, eventually it starts decaying and rotting away, that you don't have necessarily as the result of a bite. Also continues Abaya, the Endrusa Elamidas. Endrusa Elamidas, and also Jerusa would only take place only with the intent of the predator. Meaning in other words, if let's say for example a predator falls off the roof onto a victim, then there's no Jerusa. So Lapuki Shloimi Das Deloy. So if there was no Das, if it fell off a roof, for example, then there's no Drusa. Furthermore, continues Abaya, and Drusa Ella Mechayim. Drusa happens only when the predator is still alive. Lapuki La'afan Misha, as opposed to after it died. So let's say, for example, so now it sounds like it means, Rashi says it sounds like at this point, it means that let's say, for example, a lion or whatever predator died and then fell onto an animal and claws got sunk into it, it sounds like we're saying that there wouldn't be jurisdiction. As opposed to after the predator is dead, then no. So they ask, what do we need that last point for? You're telling me where there was no das, where the predator is still very much alive, and yet it didn't have das, and yet there's no drusa. Do you need to tell us in a case where it's after it's dead? Of course it's not drusa. So the answer is, no, because the last case that Abaya is talking about is where the predator did attack the victim, but then before it had a chance to pull out its claws, paskul yode, they chopped off its, somebody came and saved it and chopped off its paw. So now, in other words, when we say la'acham misa, we mean after the death of that individual organ. So you would think the moment it sticks in its claws is right when it injects its venom. And so therefore, by now, you cut it off, then it's too late. Kamash Malon, therefore, Abaya wants us to know that, no, when does it give out its venom? When it's pulling out its claws. So now you manage to save it, or you manage to cut off the paw, with the claws on it before it removed it itself. And therefore it wouldn't be Jerusa. Toysfus points out that Toysfus says, so let's say some people think then, so suppose for example they find that a hawk has attacked a bird and it's still lying on top of it and hasn't removed its claws, so they think then therefore that it would mean it never removed its claws and therefore the bird would be kosher. Toysfus says that's a mistake because it's going to hit it with its claws many times. So already the first time that it hit it with its claws and then pulled them out, then it's going to inject that venom. All we mean over here is where we watch the whole thing, and we saw that it only put in its claw and never took it out, and then we managed to save it and chop off the claw before it does anything further. Then we can say the victim is still kosher and there's no drisa. But where we didn't see the whole thing, then we have to be concerned that pulled it out and stuck it in again and again. Next, the Gemara says, "Omer Rav Baravuna, Omer Rav, Harish Nichnas Levena Shvarim. If a lion goes into an enclosure of bulls, the nimtzis Purin, the Gabe Shal Echad Mehem, and later on we find a loose nail or a loose claw from the lion stuck in the back of one of the oxen, Ein Choshen Shema Ari Dorsa. We don't have to be concerned that a lion may have clawed it." My timer, so why is that? We have to think like this. Ruiva Royas Dursin. To be sure, most lions do drisa. They do attack domestic animals. It is true that it's only a minority that don't do drisa. But on the other hand, we have, so if it was only that, we would have to consider the Ruy would tell us that the animal is Shreita. On the other hand, we have to consider, we also know the Kol Abdurdus Ein Siponim Mishmetus. On the other hand, generally when an animal attacks, when a predator attacks, its claws don't fall out when it's doing the attack, but still it finishes the attack still with its claws attached. So therefore the Zeus over here, here you have a claw, a nail embedded in the animal's back. So we don't have to be concerned that it was Drisa, because that's that kind of thing would be highly unusual for the lion to attack and then lose a claw in it. Amos, so who has reason to say that because of this fact that what happened was the animal rubbed the ox rubbed itself at some point against the wall, and there was a claw stuck in there, and therefore it wound up and therefore it wound up in the animal's back that way. So therefore you don't have to be concerned. Now Tosfos says fine, that's true. But what about all the other oxen over there? The fact is, there was a lion over there, and lions do tend to attack oxen. So fine, you don't have to be worried about that particular one maybe. But what about all the other oxen? So Tosfos explains that, no, when we say Ruy Varoyas Dursin, most lions attack, what we mean is most lions are healthy, they're capable of attacking. We don't mean they necessarily actually attack. Here we have, though, the fact that we find a claw means that obviously this lion was sick. So therefore, not only that particular one do we not have to worry about that it attacked him. We can think that it's logical it probably didn't attack any of the other ones, because it's obviously sick if it's losing its nails so easily. And therefore, we don't have to be so concerned that it attacked any of them. So the Gemara asks Adraba, but on the other hand, you could argue the other way around. You could ask for logic. Ruiv shvorim meskakekim. You could look at it like this. Yes, most oxen rub themselves against the walls, scratch themselves. Umiutin ein meskakekim. There's a minority that don't. V'chol meskakef ein siponi yeshevus legabur. But usually, when an animal is going to scratch itself, you're not going to find afterwards a claw in its, you're not going to find a claw in its back afterwards. There's there, however, it's a pony, a shovel, a gabbo. You could argue this one, you find a claw embedded in its back. Amo aridoso. Maybe you do have to be concerned that a lion did attack it. Fine. Even with Tosfos' point that, we're talking about maybe it's a sick lion over here and why is it losing nails? But Tosfos says, who says that to begin with? Maybe you're saying that it came only from rubbing against the wall, but maybe in fact there was juice over here. Okay, so the Gemara answers, Ikalame Mahachi. Fine, you're right, you could say either way. Fine, but you can leave the thing according to its chazaka, that there was no drisa beforehand, have a lay suffered drisa. So therefore, what we have over here is a case of suffered drisa. The Rav Latayme, now Rav then is going according to his Svara. The Omar, where he says further along in the Sugya, Ein Choshen L'Sofek Diyosa, we do not have to be concerned about Sofek Diyosa. Now, the Halacha is not necessarily like that, and therefore, in fact, the Poskim talk about that the din over here that we're talking about, when you find a claw in the animal's back, then maybe you do have to be concerned about Diyosa. The Raman actually has a unique shita in it. He says specifically when it comes to doubts about Diyosa, then we have to be Machmer, because he says Diyosa is the only one that it says explicitly in the Torah. All the other treifas that we've been learning all this in this entire parak, of course they're all daraisa and they're all very much binding. But nevertheless, it doesn't say them befeirush in the psukim. Therefore says the Rambam we can be makel with certain kinds of sfeikas with them, but with drusa, but with drusa then not. So in other words, this case over here that we're talking about, where you find a claw in the animal's back, is not quite so simple as to say that we don't have to worry about it. In fact, and Shulchan Aruch says that first of all, if you find a nail embedded in it, we do have to be concerned. Like Tosfos had said, it may have done drusa again and again, and therefore you have to be concerned about it. And then again, you have this case over here. Where you find a claw over there, so then we have to be concerned. And actually, in Shulchan Aruch it says even if the claw is dry, so you might say, well, if it's dry, it was obviously there a long time. Nevertheless, the halacha would not be like that in this. We do have to be choshish for it. In fact, there are Mephoshim who explain that, on the contrary, if the lion lost a claw in the attack, it's likely to be even angrier than under normal circumstances, and therefore there's much more of a concern of Dirus over here, even more than normal. Okay. However, the Gemara continues, Amar Abaya, Loyan Moran, Elotziporga. Now, when we talk about it here, when we just said that he's an appointed rab, there's not a problem if you find only one claw in the back of the ox. And again, appointed rab was saying we don't have to worry about a suffix of that because maybe it just scratched against the wall and got the nail in there. And Abaya says only if we find the actual claw there. But if you find the mark of a claw of an animal on its back, question, then you do have to be concerned, because after all, most lions do jirisa, or are capable of doing jirisa, as Tosfos says. And the Tzipora Nami, and even continues Abaya, even when we're talking about finding a claw, Loya Murin, Ella Balacha, so we're saying, Loya Murin, Ella Lacha, we're saying only when it's fresh and has blood in it, so the idea would be that it's fresh. Means, in other words, that such a thing usually doesn't come off in Jirisa, so therefore it's more likely that it was there before, and after all, if it has a blood supply, it was probably attached to the lion's paw very strongly, and therefore it's less likely that it fell off during the attack, and it's more likely that it was there from a previous time. Aval Yavesha, but if it's dry, Ogda the Mishtamta, then it's quite likely for it to fall out, and therefore there may well have been Jirisa. The Lachanami, and Abaya continues, even if the nail is fresh, Loyamon El Choda, that would only apply if there was one. So then maybe it got stuck in the wall and it ended up in the animal. Aval Tauti or Tras, but if you have two or three or more Chayshinan, then we have to be concerned, because that so many should fall out of a lion from previous times. It's unlikely that it's more likely that there was an actual attack over here. However, that would only be if those two or three are all in the row, in the shape that they come off the animal, that they're located on the lion's paw in the first place. If they're in some random order or whatever, then yeah, it may mean that they came from scratching against the wall. Again, this is all in explaining Rav's position. But again, the posts say that it's not so simple. We do have to be machmir. I suffered drusa, so not like the Gemara is saying over here, that appointed rav and then not. And the result is that whether the nail is fresh or dry and so forth, then we have to be concerned. And we have to be concerned that there was drusa. And in fact, if you find, then you would have to be concerned not only about the particular one that you found the nail in, you would have to be concerned that the other ones have been injured by it as well. And again, the post can point out that after all, if the lion lost the claw in the attack, then it's likely to be so frustrated that it's going to go lax out and attack even more animals, and therefore you have to be concerned about all of that. Okay, so now let's get into this matter of Suffolk Durasa. Omer Gitmar, so we have a discussion. Rav Omer, in question with Suffolk Durasa, Rav says we're not concerned about Suffolk Durasa. The animal has a Thespis Cassius, and therefore it's fine. Or Shmuel Omer question with Suffolk Durasa, whereas Shmuel says we do have to be concerned about Suffolk Durasa. So it can be, again, because of the idea of Suffolk Durasa Lachomra, or it can be because Suffolk Durasa Lachomra is the usual rule, or is it, as the Rambam says, specifically by Jerusa, we have to be machmir, because that one says explicitly in the Torah. So the Gemara explains, what kind of status are we talking about? I'm a Suffolk all, Suffolk like all. Now, everybody agrees that if we have a Suffolk, whether the lion even came there in the first place, then we have a reason to say that it didn't come in there, and therefore all of them would be mutter. We don't have to assume, just because there are lions in the area, that automatically we should think that therefore it came in, and to be concerned about that, we don't have to say that. The Rashba explains, and in his Sefer Torah Abayas, that the reason is, look, I mean, it may not have even come in, and even if it did, maybe it didn't touch them. And after all, you have a chazaka that the animals weren't drusa in the first place. So the Ra'ah, who often argues with the Rashba, or explains differently what it means is not even a matter of suffix, it's a matter of that you can, to begin with, you don't even have to worry about that, you don't even worry about that, if there's any possibility it came in there in the first place. So the question is only, so it has to be the case we're talking about where there would even be a suffix that we have to be worried about is when the predator did go in there. We know that it went in this. Now, Suffolk Kalba, Suffolk Schooner, if you don't know what kind of animal it was that went in there, whether it was a dog or a cat. And you said before, a dog is not able to do drusa. So also no problem. You don't have to assume that you don't have to assume that it was a cat. But Ashra says we're talking about where we have, but with a cat or a dog in the area, and therefore maybe if we find that an animal was a cat, then we can say that it was a dog. If there is only a cat in the area, then we have to assume that cats are more commonly found and more likely to be predators. He brings from Tosfos that says the other way around, if we find a drisa having been done, but we don't know which, then we don't assume there was a cat at all, but the Rashba says sort of iyun. We have to understand why Tosfos would say such a thing. Okay. Anyway, also continues the Gemara. Oh, Shosik, the Ace of Badai, Benayu. If now the predator went in there and was quiet and was just sitting among them, Ema Shloma Shavi, then you can say maybe it made peace with them. Sometimes you have, you know, even predators and prey. Look, you know, in Mashiach's times, that'll always be that way. But nowadays, sometimes we have that animals that normally would prey on one another live together peacefully for a while. So therefore, so you don't have a problem. Furthermore, if it cut off, if it bit off or clawed off the head of one of the animals, then we can assume that it calmed down from its anger. It was angry when it came in there, and it did this, but now it killed one animal. We can assume, fine, it satisfied its bloodlust, and now it's not attacking the other ones. So we don't have to worry about the other ones. Another case. What happens if the lion is roaring and the cows are mooing? Rashi points out in Lashon Kodesh, and apparently in Aramaic as well, you have different words for the different noises that animals make. So here the lion is roaring and the cattle are mooing or lowing. So then also it means they're all scared of each other. So as much as the oxen are scared of the lion, the lion is also scared of them, and therefore we don't have to worry that there was drisa. So in other words, the idea would be that they're equally afraid of one another. The Rambam phrases it that the idea would be that they start mooing because they're afraid of his growling. So in other words, the idea is there's no drisa. We just said that he came in there and started growling at them and they got frightened and they start moving. It doesn't mean that there was any drisa. So therefore, all those cases are not considered the kind of suffix that Rav and Shmuel would argue about. He says, what is the machlokas? The iu kashas, if the iu come a kavron, if the lion or whatever predator is quiet and the kosher animals, or making noise, or mooing, or in the case of chickens, clucking, or whatever it is. So, Marsalbar, to Shmuel holds, Maisa covered Behu. Why are they making noise, and why is he quiet? It must be that he's actually attacking them and doing something to them. And therefore, we have the potential problem of doing so. Marsalbar, whereas Rav holds, Mach must be a susi, who defiled them. They're only doing it because they're afraid of him. Even though he's not making noise, even though he's not growling, and even though he's not growling and roaring at them, nevertheless, they're still afraid seeing a lion around there, and therefore they're making noise. But Rav says that doesn't mean that he actually attacked any one of them. Okay, so the Gemara says, the halacha is that we do have to be concerned about suffering. What about the fact that Rav says that not? And usually we have, anyway, when we have an argument of Rav versus Shmuel, in Dine Issa V'Heter, the halacha is usually as Rav. So Rav Ashi says, Sa'amema, why are you ignoring what Rav says over here? So Sa'amema answers, Lo Shmieli, I have not heard what Rav says. And by that he means, Lo Shmieli, I don't agree with him. So in other words, fine. Yes, the halacha is usually like Rav against Shmuel, but Rav Amemar says, I don't agree. In this, I disagree with Rav. Another explanation, the Gemara says, another answer we can say is we actually find that Rav changed his mind and ended up agreeing with Shmuel. How do we have that? It happened once that there was a shoutafah. Rashi translates shoutafah as a basket full of goods. Tosca says a little bit differently, not so much a basket, but rather an enclosure, a cave full of birds. Whatever the case, so there was a whole bunch of birds over there, and then they just suffered drusus, and there was a hawk or whatever got in there, and there was a concern that maybe there was drusus. The also came to Rav, it was brought to Rav as a shamsa. Shadrinu came to Shmuel, so and he in turn sent it on to Shmuel to decide what the halacha is. Later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about that Shmuel will knew lots and lots of shilas in Hilchos Tzareifus, so Rav figured that Shmuel is going to be the expert to be able to know. And Shmuel held that they were Tzareifus. He held that there's a problem that they may have been drusa, and therefore they're also to eat. So Shmuel strangled all these birds with Shadana and Manana, and he threw the dead birds in the river so that people don't accidentally chef them and eat them. Now, the point is, if you're going to tell me that Rav didn't change his mind and hold there's no problem with Southern drusa, the Shmuel, then Rav himself should declare that it's mutter. Why is he sending them off to Shmuel? So therefore that shows evidently that Rav changed his mind. So the Gemara says, what? Elamai for debate. So what, you're going to tell me then Rav did change his mind and hold that a case of Sophic like that, we do have to be concerned. Then also you could say, why does he have to send to Shmuel? The Shmuel. He also could ask for them flat out. He doesn't need to delegate it to Shmuel. Ella, no. Rather, we have to answer. Ask where the Shmuel have. What happened was, this whole story happened in the area where Shmuel was the Rav, where Shmuel was the Rav, and therefore the Rav does not want to step on Shmuel's toes. It's not generalistic, something where Rav and Shmuel are equal in greatness, then Rav is not going to step on Shmuel's toes and paskin in Shmuel's area. So Shmuel himself holds that it's usher, so therefore Rav is not going to preempt it. However, Rashi goes on to say that nevertheless, we can still show from that, says Rashi, that Rav evidently did change his mind, because Rashi brings two different gears over here. Rashi's first gear is without the word Ella. So it means that just the answer is the reason why he sent it to Shmuel is because actually the Shmuel have it was Shmuel's place. Nevertheless, that would still show that Rav did change his mind. If he didn't change his mind, why is he sending it to Shmuel? The fact is that you don't want to waste Jewish money unnecessarily. I've heard a chos al mamon and Yisrael, like we learned earlier in the parrot. So according to that, it would still show that Rav did in fact change his mind. Why didn't he just decide it himself? Because it's Shmuel's place. It's where Shmuel was the Rav, and he didn't want to preempt him. On the other hand, Rashi brings another gear, so Ella asked where the Shmuel have it. However, Rabbi can answer that it's Shmuel's place, and then in that case, we have no proof whether Rav changed his mind. Rav didn't want to do anything about it because it is Shmuel's area, and it should be Shmuel's decision of the Psak Halacha. So according to that Gusa, with the word Ella, it would mean that we can't show whether Rav changed his mind. Rashi doesn't like the first explanation. He prefers the second explanation, that therefore we can't really prove one way or the other whether Rav ended up changing his mind to agree with Shmuel or not. But be that as it may, he said that Amemar says, I disagree with Rav, and Amemar being a later on murder, and the halacha is like him, and therefore that means the halacha is like Shmuel against Rav, so we are concerned about a case of Suffolk Jerusa in the case where we said before where the predator went in there and the predator was quiet and the would-be victims are making a noise, then we have to be concerned that there was Jerusa. Okay, now let's go and analyze this story in a little more detail. We said that Shmuel strangled the birds and threw them into the river. So Lomali the Mathematician, why does he need to strangle them? He could just throw them into the river as they are. The answer is, Mafrachonim Salkan, well then they'll fly out of the river, and then later on, people might catch them, and they won't realize that there's a Suffolk Jerusa on them, and therefore they're going to end up selling them to Jews. And so the Gemara says, well, the Shrinu Shnei Masafodet, fine, why doesn't Shmuel keep the birds around for 12 months? Later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about exactly that when we have a Suffolk Jerusa, we can see, we're going to talk about that an animal that's safer generally doesn't survive more than 12 months, so then in that case, we can keep the birds for 12 months and see what happens after that. In fact, with female birds, we're going to learn later on in the parrot, you don't even need to wait that long. Female birds, you just need to wait until they start producing a new clutch of eggs and lay them. So why do we do that? And the answer is, also go to the The problem is it may come Sakala. Meanwhile, there's a lot of birds over there. People may not realize that all of them is a problem, and therefore they may end up eating them. So in other words, it comes out from Rashi, and this is how it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that only when there's a lot of birds is there a problem. On the other hand, the Rambam says that we should be machmir even when it's one bird. Now, Tosfos does point out that we have later on in the Perek, when we talk about Sofik Dursa, we do say that, for example, we have eggs that we don't know if they came from a Tsefa, but we have a bird which you don't know is Tsefa, we can save the eggs and see what happens if the bird goes on to develop a new clutch of eggs and lay them, then we know that's good. They were not concerned about Chakola, so why not? Tosfos points out, first of all, the Gemara does discuss in other places in Shas whether we are concerned about Chakola. Second of all, it doesn't take as long for the bird to start producing a new clutch of eggs. And third of all, Tosfos says, the Gemara is going to explain over here that Shmuel wanted to publicize the whole point. So the Gemara goes on. Well, this Beninu Lo'ojit Tosfim, why didn't Shmuel sell the birds to Goyim? And the answer is also was Abnein with Yisrael. Fine, but the Goyim may go and resell them to Jews. And again, the Jews are not going to realize that there's a Sophic Jerusalem. Okay, so the Gemara says, so fine, V'lech Nechinu V'lech Shedinu La'ashba, fine, but why isn't Shmuel, he has to strangle the birds, fine, but why can't he throw them into the garbage? Why does he have to throw them into the river? So the Gemara says, well, the Taimeh, according to your Svarah, you're going to ask them a question, you can also ask them the Shedinu La'flogin, still, why does he have to throw them into the river? He could have thrown them to the dogs. And obviously, the reason why Shmuel did this is in order to make a public, when he goes to the river, it'll become very well known. So now this kind of concept of Suffolk Dursa will be well publicized. Tosfos points out that, and Rashi rather points out, there were it was a lot of small birds, so you can't really check them one by one. The Gemara is going to talk about fruit soon, that you can in principle check whether a bird has suffered drissa, or an animal has suffered drissa, that would make a trefa. You could check them, but here Rashi points out, there's a lot of birds, there's too much of a chance that he might get more, that he might make a mistake with one of them. Also, another point Rashi says, which he prefers to say, is after all, in this case, to begin with, they were attacked by a mate. Now, a mate is a hawk or a sparrow hawk. It's not that large a predator. It doesn't produce that much venom. So you wouldn't necessarily notice the simonim that we're going to talk about soon about flesh on the animal, on the victim becoming red. You wouldn't necessarily notice. So therefore, Shmuel might easily miss something. He decides to throw it in the river, and this way, going to the river, will publicize the matter, and this way everybody will be well-known, and this way it'll be well-known. With that said, there are Rishonim who understand that Shmuel did check them, not like Rashi was saying, couldn't because it'd be too hard. Shmuel did check them, he found that they had this redness, and therefore, since we're concerned about Suffolk Yerusha, so he threw them into the river. For the same reason, the Gemara doesn't say they could have sold them to Goyim, because again, the point is, he wants to publicize that everybody should know about this concept of suffering Jews. The Gemara continues. Another case. There was a goose in the household of Rabashi. All the Bene Kanya. One day, this goose went among and was walking among the weeds. Nofak the osak in the masim sukuy dama, and it came out from there, from the weeds, and its neck was full of blood. So obviously, it got injured somewhere there among the weeds. So now, do we have to be concerned about Jews? Amar Rabashi, loya minin suffered kalva suffered shunra. Ema Kalba. Didn't we say on Amud Aleph that when we have a suffix, we know that some kind of animal went in there, but we don't know if it was a dog or a cat. A dog where there's no problem of drissa, or a cat where there is drissa. And we said Ema, we can say Kalba, it was a dog, and we don't have to be worried about drissa. Hochanami, the same thing over here, says the Rashi. Suffix Kanya, suffix Shunra, it's a suffix, whether it was injured on a reed, or whether it was injured by a cat. So we don't have to worry about Ema Kanya Machye. We can say that it was injured by a weed, and therefore we don't have to worry about traits. Now we did talk about Udi in the Masechta that with a bird, since you only need to shech one simen, so therefore we are able to actually do that. We shech the windpipe, and then we wait till the bird dies, and then we check the esophagus and see if there's any problem there. So now Tosfos points out that So if anyway you have to check it, here you could easily check. The Tosus points out, after all, if it's caught by a parrot versus injured by a reed, the difference between those two types of injuries would be very noticeable. Why shouldn't we have to check it? So Tosus says maybe a cat's injury is not so noticeable. So in other words, so in practice we may have to check it, but it's still going to matter. The question is, if we find something in the windpipe or in the esophagus, obviously there's going to be a problem, but we don't have to be concerned about drusa anywhere in the rest of the body, would be the idea. Next. Ami Bnei Rabchia, the sons of Rabchia, said, their names were Yehuda and Chizkiah, Drusa Sha'omru, and all this time you've been talking about Drusa, is only Tzricha. So when you have, we're saying that an animal has been attacked by a predator, and now we have to, if we can't tell on the outside of the body where exactly the Drusa was, so it can be where there's a suck of Drusa, it can even be where we know that it was Drusa, but we don't know where. So Rashi explains that means in all these cases of suffix that we talked about, or where we know there was a Drusa, but we don't recognize it from the outside. Implying, in other words, that would imply if we do know where it was actually injured, then even the checking that the Gemara is going to talk about now is not going to help. And Tosfos brings from the Rivam about that no, because sometimes, as the Gemara is going to say over here, that the flesh reddens, but not always is that reddening so noticeable. But Tosfos says that no, even Vade Drusa, even when we know for sure that it was Drusa, nevertheless, the Bedika that we're talking about over here is going to be affected. And Tosfos goes on and discusses that point. With that said, we've talked about before that Amar says that often we're not experts in doing this kind of Bedika, and therefore we have to declare the animal chief. Okay, so anyway, so the sons of Rabchia say, what we have to do is we have to check all the sides of the animal, all opposite the internal organs. So in other words, we have to look on the outside and see if we see any evidence of drusa anywhere on the outside. And it would also mean actually the shaft explains Rashi to be saying that you just check it on the outside. Tosfos elsewhere explains that what it means is that after you shaft it, you have to check the entire body cavity. If you find any place where it's reddened, then that means there's the eris, there's that poison, therefore it's tricky. And the idea would be, in other words, the eres is now, the Rashi explains, the eres is eventually going to burn through, whether we understand eres as venom, whether we understand it as bacteria or whatever, eventually it's going to burn through, and eventually it's going to cause holes in internal organs. So in other words, the idea would be that you only have to check the body cavity. There's no other part of the animal where the eres is going to have that effect. So again, if you have an actual hole someplace, then that's different. But if you just have this reddening, then it's a problem only if it's somewhere in the body cavity. So say, for example, the Ra'al gives an example. Let's say, for example, that it was attacked on its thigh. So you do have eris over there, but nevertheless, even though it becomes red over there, that's not a place where it's going to become safe. So Omer Rav Yosef called the Bnei Rabchia, Krav Pirsha Shmuel. This that the sons of Rabchia said, Shmuel clarifies it further and explains what it means is the Omer Shmuel, Meshum Rav Chanina ben Antigris, Yosef Shomu, Tzricha Bedika, Keneged Bnei Me'ayim, you have to check in the whole area of opposite all of the internal organs, you have to check the entire body cavity. Okay, the Gemara says, Boy Ilfa. So Ilfa has a question in this connection. Yes, Jerusalem Simonim, I'm in Jerusalem Simonim. Suppose that the animal was attacked on the Simonim, on the windpipe or the esophagus. Is Jerusalem relevant over there? Or would we say that the Simonim are tough and therefore they don't get damaged by this eris? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Zeira, hold the Boy Ilfa, Kva Pirshin of Chanan Bar Rava. Again, Rav Chanan Bar Rava already clarified that and gave us the answer. The Amar of Chanan Bar Rava, Amar Rav, Jerusha Shamu, Tzricha Knigga, Knigga, Besa Cholo Kolon. You need to check the entire inside of the animal. That means Vafilu B'Simonim. So that means even you have to check even the Simonim. We don't just mean, in other words, the area from the chest to the tail. It means you have to check the entire inside of the animal, which includes the Simonim, which are on the inside of the animal. So you would have to check that as well and see whether there's any of this reddening over there. Similarly, another another din we can ask about. Boy Ilfa, another question that Ilfa has. Simonim Shini Daldil. What happens if the Simonim are torn away in different places from their attachments to the body? We touched on this earlier in our perek, but so here again, in other words, the windpipe and the esophagus are usually tightly connected together along the length, and they're also connected within the neck by various ligaments and things like that. Now, if they've been torn away here and there in different places, the kama, how much of them has to be torn away, so the simonim themselves, in other words, are intact, but they're not attached where they're supposed to be, how much would be to make the animal treifa? And again, Amar Abzera, called the Bori Ilfa, where Ilfa is asking for a pirushah of Rabba Baba Chana, Rabba Baba Chana already answered that, the Amar Rabba Baba Chana, Amar Shmuel, simonim shini daldalu b'rubon, that if the simonim, in most of their length, only daldalu, are detached, then on the side over here it's a treifa. So therefore, there's your answer. We learned this at the beginning of the parak, that yes, only if it's in Ruban, only if it's along most of the length, would the animal be treifa, but not if they're only detached and unmoored in a few different places. Another din as far as Yosa, Boyd of Asi, Hamasmosama. What happens if so what happens, we were talking about just now, that Jerusalem causes a reddening of the skin and of the muscles, which means that now eris, that now this venom has been injected over there. What about Hamasmosama? What about if the flesh over there rots away over there? Does that mean that, so let's say, for example, it was in the thigh, and we said before, the thigh is not an area that is subject where Jerusha would be a problem of treifas. But now, if the flesh over there is rotting away, so now would we have to be concerned that maybe it means that the eres had an effect on it or not? So again, Amar Rav Zera, the boy of Amik, Rav Pirshut of Yehuda. Rav Yehuda already clarified, the Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, we said, the Jerusalem Shiyadim Basa, Keneged Bnei Me'ayim, that it was only a problem if the flesh reddens opposite the Bnei Me'ayim, opposite the internal organs. And he continues, Nismas Mesabasar, if the flesh is rotting away, then we consider that flesh as though it wasn't there, and any place in the body where, if something is missing, then it would be treifa. An example would be that tzoimus agidim, an area on the leg joint of the animal, where you have a bunch of tendons that come together. We're going to learn about it more in detail in the next paragraph. So in an area like that, so for example, if you have something where nital, where when it's removed completely, that's treifa. The same way, this flesh that's rotting away, that's deteriorated like that, would also be considered as though it's gone, and therefore in the same way, the animal would be treifa. So now, in other words, the point is, you're talking about over here where, for example, an area of the thigh where this happens, where the flesh is decaying away. So then we would have to apply the same thing. We would have to figure out whether this is enough to make the animal treifa if that muscle was removed altogether. We're trying to discuss what exactly, so Rashi is saying over here it's relevant as far as, for example, the Tzoyim HaSagidim, the Rashba and the Rosh point out that also we're going to learn in the next paragraph you can have a case where an animal has a compound fracture, where the animal has a compound fracture where the bone sticks out of the flesh, and there you have dinim over there. If most of it is covered by skin and muscle, then eventually it will heal. But again, we need it to be healthy flesh, not this time that's deteriorating, that's nismasmus over here. So that's another nafkamin on this. Okay, well, heichidam nismasmus, what is the definition of nismasmus for this purpose? Oh, and the answer is, amun avun avrede v'shua, kol shal roifa gode yom amida avosachai, where if in a person, or for that matter an animal, a veterinarian, would scrape away this flesh to leave the healthy flesh over there. So in other words, you're talking about flesh, you're talking about where it starts turning gangrenous or something. We're there. That's considered nismasmus, and therefore it's considered as though it wasn't there. So the Gemara gives an example. Amar Rav Ashi, Yavin and Bei Rav Kahana, when we were in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana as Talmidim, Isaac Amon Rea, they brought to us a lot. If you have a misvila yasva shakir, when they put it on the table or whatever in front of us, it was sitting there very nicely. It looked like a perfectly normal lung. But if you have a madla, when they picked up the lung, it broke apart and it broke up into a bunch of pieces. This is in parenthesis. In the Gemara and on the side, there's a different gusa over here. Mitlacha tili tili, nafla tili tili. Whatever the case, the point is that it fell apart into pieces. The tarif nava. So we decided that it was tereka midir of Huna Brei Rav Shua based on what Rav Huna Brei Rav Shua is saying. In other words, obviously this was a diseased lung. That, and therefore it couldn't hold itself together when you picked it up, and therefore by the same, and therefore it's considered as though it was missing, and therefore, as we said before, that when parts of the lungs are missing, then the animal is tefa. So by the same term, so that would be the same kind of thing any time we have mismas, misabosim, any time that we have that flesh is turning gangrenous or whatever, and deteriorating, then consider as though it wasn't there, and therefore any time that such a thing would have implications as far as hilchos tefas, that we're, because it's missing, it's considered it wasn't, as though it wasn't there, so the same thing would be in this kind of scenario.